This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the October 4th edition of Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with us. It's all about above average investing for the average investor. That's the most of us. Most of us are fairly average, and we want to be better than that. So we have to work at it, and that's what we're about. So we're here to talk about principles, investing principles, and the impact your retirement portfolio has, and maybe share some ideas about how we can make that grow. Yesterday, we talked about a new book called Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not, A Parent's Guide. Of course, the strongest lesson comes from example. So where did you learn about managing your money? For myself, my parents were fairly poor. My dad was just a seaman, and my mom ironed sheets and shirts for people in the neighborhood. And, you know, I had four brothers, so we were fairly poor. So my lesson was learned young. We had no money. And I'm sure a lot of you had that same situation. But my first real lesson in the value of money was when I bought my first car. It was a used Volkswagen Bug. And my parents co-signed for me. I was, 17? And it cost $495. I found out that by the time I was done making the payments, I would have had to pay $650. I was not happy about paying that extra $150. And ever since then, I've always paid cash for my car. I've never financed a car since. That was my first big lesson on how expensive borrowing money was. And that's why you hear me talk to you all the time, say, just spend less than you earn. Most people who spend more than they earn do it because they want to, not because they have to. They do it because they want to. They want the extra things that they really can't afford. Being rich is not going to be, it's not a difficult task. Over the years, you start young enough, all you do is spend less than you earn, save the rest and invest it, you'll be rich. And we never stop learning, as we all know, right? It's still to this day, I learn stuff all the time. And that's really why I like this job. I like doing what I do because it's a learning curve constantly. And speaking of learning, parents who are counting on their 529 plans to pay for college this year or next year may be for an unpleasant surprise. Your college savings plan may be worth less than you think. That's our main talking point today. First, let's go over the phones, though, before we go any further. Let's try to answer your questions live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour, or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listen line, and the number is always the same, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. This is Quentin from Massachusetts. The question I have is, you were just talking about if a company goes bankrupt and you're in their 401k, that 401k is actually held by another, you know, company, insurance company or broker or whatever, and then so that does their bankruptcy, the company you work for, it doesn't affect your 401k. But the question I have is, what if the broker goes bankrupt? I know if you have money in the bank and the bank, you know, goes under, that the FDIC will cover you. I think it's up to $250,000. It used to be $100,000. I don't know if that $250,000 was a temporary increase or if it's permanent now. I think a similar thing if you're in a credit union. It's not the FDIC. It's some kind of credit union insurance. And I was wondering what the value of the protection in there was. But more importantly, in your 401k, is there any protection? I believe there's some sort of protection. I think, as I recall, a long time ago, it was like $500,000, but I'm not sure what I'm talking about. Is there any guarantee if the company holding your funds actually goes under in terms of recovering your funds or, you know, somehow it's all yours? That's the question anyways. Thanks for the show. Fantastic show. Take care.
Okay, almost everything you said for someone who's saying I'm not sure was correct. So, for a brokerage firm, let's say a brokerage firm also has SIPC, S-I-P-C insurance, and it's $500,000 per account. So let's say you have a 401k and the company you work for goes under and the custodian of the company, which is totally a separate company, goes under at or about the same time. Where does your money go? You are still protected. under SIPC up to $500,000. You have to remember the ownership of the stocks or mutual funds in your account on a 401k is you. You own those, not the brokerage firm. Brokerage doesn't own it. It only facilitates the trades and holds those positions for you in behalf of you. You still own them. Whether they go bankrupt or not, you still own them. They don't own them. So it really doesn't affect you. That's why I've said yesterday, don't worry about it. That's something you should not worry about. As long as the custodian is SIPC insured, that's all you care about. And almost every custodian that works with a 401k is, because of the ERISA laws. There's a lot of ERISA, they call them E-R-I-S-A, ERISA rules that they have to comply with. So you're pretty darn well protected. It's pretty hard. The only thing that you're not protected is if you own XYZ company and that in your 401k, you own the stock of that company in your 401k, and that company goes bankrupt, well, you lose all the position, all that money that you had almost, usually. Okay, so it's the holdings that you have that you worry about, not the brokerage firm, not your employer. Okay? Now, these are some of the stories Invest Talk insiders on the news carousel Invest Talk today came across. China's running out of cheap fuel, a story from Morningstar. China's running out of cheap fuel. Yahoo tops the list of largest ever data breaches. Remember that data breach they had a few years ago? Well, it was much worse than they've been reporting. It was almost every Yahoo account. Every Yahoo account. The idea the EU is putting Apple against Qualcomm there. And from USA Today, how being lazy can help you save money. Just a bunch of articles. So, you know, go there and take a look. Using your bank's website or mobile app, create a recurring transfer from checking to savings every month. Or if you're regular paid twice or monthly, consider setting up a one after each payday. Set up some automatic savings abilities. Automatic transfers are free from regularly deciding when and how to save money. It's pretty simple. You can do it yourself. And the setup can just take a few minutes. Just automatically save money yourself. What you're doing is you're just paying yourself first. And you really should. Why not? So if you take home $5,000 a month, aim to put maybe at least 10% of it away. If you can do more, that's great. That's really great. Anyways, there's all those kinds of stories and helpful hints on being an InvestTalk insider. What can I do to help you today? Back to the phones. Want to talk to people on the phone. They always open 24 hours a day. And, of course, they're live right now, 888-99-CHART. Let's go ahead and talk to Art Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art?
How are you doing, Steve? How are you today?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just had a question. I was reading an article about the possibility of China backing oil with the yuan. And backing that with gold, what kind of effect would it have on gold and oil?
Well, if they have been a big buyer in the past of gold to back their currency. You know, they've been using our dollar for decades as a backup to their currency, and they've been trying to now buy more and more gold, and they really don't have a lot of gold compared to the size of their economy. They don't. Now, they have a lot of gold compared to other countries, but compared to the size of their economy, you know, like we have a ton more gold compared to our size than they do compared to their size. So if they're going to do that, that should be positive for gold prices, if that's a problem.
Oh, okay.
Now, I haven't read this, though, Art. I'm not sure where you read it, but I haven't read it. Doesn't mean it's not true. I just haven't seen it yet. But that's what that would do.
Yeah, because I was reading that gold was or China was going to try to back the oil barrels with their currency and back that up with gold. I just wanted to find out what effect it would have on oil prices as well as gold prices.
I don't think it'll have too much effect on oil prices. I don't, because that's more of a supply and demand, worldwide supply and demand kind of thing. Well, gold is too, but if they're going to back up another like they're going to back up oil. So as they use more and more oil, they're going to keep buying more and more gold to back that up. And use, in other words, using their currency to buy gold. What they're doing is they're just trying to make sure that their currency, they're trying to make their currency a world currency, a first world currency that everybody wants to own.
Yeah, that's what the article was getting at. They were trying to make the yuan one of the currencies.
To do that, they have to let it free float. They're not there yet. It's not free floating. It floats within a range, but it's not free floating. If they want to be a world currency, they got to let the world set the price of their currency, not them. See, what they're trying to do is convince the world that their currency is worth a lot of money because they have gold backing it up.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. They had more gold than what you say.
Yeah. So, appreciate the call,
you know,
Art.
Because
thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Here's a thought. How about saving? Having one savings account might not be enough, especially if you like focusing on specific financial goals. That's where a single purpose account could help you. Like say you wanted to buy a car. Well, start saving up in a special account to buy that car. Think about that. Or vacation. Put money in that account. That's your vacation account. Time to ask your money questions between 4 and 5 Pacific time, and we'll talk it over anytime you want here on Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Let's go talk to Daniel in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Daniel?
Hi, Steve. Fine. I just had two quick questions. Listen to you on 1220 every day.
Thank you.
For Macy's and Volkswagen, just wondered if they both seemed undervalued to me. I took small positions in them. Just wondered what you thought, Macy's and Volkswagen.
Got to be careful. I would consider Macy's a value trap. I got hit twice this year, or maybe even three times. You could consider me. I've got hit with value traps. One was Teva Pharmaceuticals. Macy's might be a value trap. It operates 829 department stores in 45 states, D.C., Puerto Rico, and Guam. I don't know about those Puerto Rico store.
I'll take this on the air.
Okay, no problem. And why do I say it's a value? Okay, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Why do I say Macy's might be a value trap? Well, because it's a very low P.E. ratio at 7. They're going to make $3.40 this year after making next year after making $3.12 this year. But then 2019 is down to 267, down 21%. Sales have been falling every quarter for over 2 years, Macy's. And they have a lot of debt. So the PE looks really cheap. It's a 7, and the 5-year range is 7 to 18. So it's at the very low range, and you know how I like that. Return on equity is pretty high at 23. Well, return on equity might be because they have lots and lots of debt. So I do see insiders buying at this low level. But for me, it could be a value trap because of their lack of sales. I would be very, very careful of Macy's. Volkswagen, I feel better about because their problems all was they're self-inflicted. And I think that they're getting past those problems. So I feel better about that. Even though I'm not a big car investor, I don't like investing in car companies, usually because they carry too much debt for my tastes. Let's go to Thomas and Hayward. How are you doing, Thomas? Oh, Thomas, we're going to have to take a break. I'm sorry. Hold on. I'll pick you up right after the break. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. Questions? Do you know where all your retirement accounts savings are? Maybe it's time to simplify. Let's talk about that. Reach me now on InvestTalk. Thomas, thank you for waiting. I appreciate it. Thomas and Hayward, how are you doing?
Hey, fine. How are you today, Steve?
Good. Thank you for holding.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for taking my call. My question today is about shorting stocks. I have a question about shorting stocks. And my question is regarding the cost and determining how you can find out the number of shares your broker owns.
Ah.
I think maybe every broker does it differently. Is there a standard?
No, there is not. You're right. Every broker can do it differently. Shorting a stock means, for everybody else here, Thomas, means that you're borrowing somebody else's stock and selling it in your portfolio. You borrow it and you sell it in your portfolio. What happens, that means you are short the stock. You never owned it. That's why you're short. You never had it. And at some point, you got to buy it back to give it back to who you borrowed it from. And Thomas says, mentioned that brokers usually have those stocks. And yes, the broker can lend its own stocks to you if it wants, or it can borrow it from somebody else's account if they have what is called not a cash account, but a margin account. If they have a margin account, their stocks are lendable to somebody else. Now, the cost, you mentioned the cost, Daniel. You're actually borrowing money there. You're borrowing some, remember, you're borrowing. Uh-huh. So you got to, they're charging you for that. And it could be like, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to take a guess at the top of my head about in the range of 8% per year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there's a cost that a lot of people don't think about.
That's like an annual rate?
Yes.
The 8%?
Oh, yes.
That's pretty heavy.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, but it's different from broker to broker. You know, you can't, there's no one set thing. Okay. I hope that answered your question, Thomas.
Is there a way to determine the number of shares the broker has, though?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Pick up the phone and ask him. I don't know if it really matters because it wouldn't change anything. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't like be
Got
charged.
It.
Yeah, not like going to be charged less because a broker had it versus somebody else lent it to you. It's not this. It wouldn't
All
be
right.
that. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciated.
Thank you. Will in San Diego. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, Steve. I've got a question about and I believe it's a mortgage REIT that I'm looking at, and I just heard your ad about real estate investment trust. And the ticker symbol is LADR, and I want to know if that's one of the pundits on Wall Street labeled it a strong buy, and I wanted to see if you agree.
Okay, this is called Ladder Capital Corporation. It's LADR, as you pointed out. It is a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, that originates fixed rate and floating rate commercial mortgages and other financing. Okay? So it originates these loans, and it pays out 90% of its earnings in the form of a dividend to you, the shareholder. And the rate last year was 8.7%. That was the dividend yield, 8.7%.
And it seems a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Sales have been increasing in the last four quarters. We're talking pretty significantly, okay, 30, 40, 50%, okay? So it's done quite well recently. And if you're going to buy it for that dividend, you know, it's doing really well. Obviously, Will, one of the reasons it's doing well is because real estate is doing well, right? So it's going to be subject to the whims of real estate. And if you think real estate is going to do well for another couple of years, might be a good place to be.
Okay.
Maybe
it is a strong buy at this point.
It's
best would be to just buy it over time, buy a little now and a little later.
That might be best, but don't buy too. Don't overload it. But I would prefer you do it that way myself. You know, a little at a time. It looks like it's in a range from $12.60 to about $14.50. Looks like it's in a range. So right now it's at $13.76. So it's kind of in the middle of that range. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for the call, Will. Appreciate it. Time for InvestTalk 101, everybody. A lesson in everyday investing. There are certain tax advantages to owning municipal bonds, but there are risks too. Don't ever forget about that. What's one way to minimize the downside? The answer is to stay diversified. Keep the costs down. Municipal ETFs offer investors instant diversification, as this is a fund which is professionally managed and holds a broad array of bonds. Management fees and expenses are very low compared to purchasing the same amount of bonds from your broker in your own account. But you know, I've mentioned many, many times that a bond fund, even a municipal bond fund, sells at net asset value. And if interest rates rise, that net asset value will go down. But if you own the bonds yourself, even in municipal bonds, you always go back to par. So you might want to consider that. You can also consider the ETFs or the bond fund, but just be aware of the dangers. You can reach me right now as we move into part two of today's Invest Talk. My direct line is my direct line between 4 and 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. The process of investing is more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course, and along the way, there are issues about taxes and then estate planning and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing your money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person could possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off decisions, important decisions. Most times, that's not productive. KPP Financial's philosophy is the more their clients know, the more successful they'll be, and the more predictable their future will be. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions. Now let's continue with the podcast. Time now to get back to Invest Talk, answers to life's important money questions. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Manu in Fremont. How you doing, Manu?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my... I have a question.
Uh-huh.
It's related to the Bosch rule sale.
Okay.
It's a typical 30 days, but if you have two, three lots, let's say you have one lot and you are losing money in that, mm-hmm. and you have a second lot which is not losing money or let's say little loss.
In the same, only the same stock, in the same stock?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you bought 100 shares. And then another 100 shares and another 100 shares, and you have a loss yeah. in each one. Okay.
Yeah. So if you lose, if you are losing money, you want to get out only from one lot.
Okay.
Can you take a loss on that and then come back within 30 days to do a lot again? Let's say stock was trading at 30. Now you can buy back at 20 by taking little loss. Can you do that within 30 days or not?
Okay, so let's say you buy a stock three times, 100 shares each, and each over a period of a year, and now you're losing money on all three of those tranches.
Yes.
The rule usually is first in, first out. So if you sell 100 shares, it would be that first 100 shares that you bought. And that would be the loss that you would take. So now you're saying, if I buy that stock, you can't buy that stock back for 30 days or else you won't get to collect the loss, right? That's the rule. That's a wash rule. Now, you sell this second tranche within 30 days again or 20 days or whatever. Are you saying now yes. can I buy back the first 100 days shares?
Yes.
No, you can't. The wash will still be in effect on that second 100 days.
Okay. Does it apply to the options? Let's say you get out, but you buy the calls and you sell the calls itself, not the stock. I mean, does not convert from options.
I don't think the wash rule will affect the option because it's not actually owning the stock. But I'm not positive, Manu. That's a good question. I'm not positive about that. I just don't think
but
it would
internet,
because the option is a different investment.
Yeah, it says the substantially identical stock or security or contract. That is very strange because contract expires after 30 days.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I just don't. I've never looked into that rule, never knew it. You're going to have to ask somebody smarter than me, Manu. Sorry. I don't have the answer to that second question. Good question.
Okay.
Appreciate
Thanks
the question. Thank you. So, yeah, you're talking about options. So, wash rule, everybody, is that you cannot, when you buy stock and you then want to sell it, you can do that anytime you want, but you can't sell it and then buy it back immediately. You have to wait to, if you want to take the loss that, you know, you want to actually realize the loss by selling it. You can't do that if you try to buy stock back right away within 30 days. You got to wait 31 days. That's the wash rule. Okay? Just make sure you know what that means. Okay, college savings plan. You may not have as much money as you think you have in college savings plan in the next year or two. One of the reasons is many states require that you buy bond funds as children get close to needing the money for college. And if you're stuck in a bond fund, and they require that you stay in a bond fund, and the Fed keeps raising rates, the article I'm referring to is saying, yeah, your value may go down, which is very, very true. Remember, I've talked to you about it. Rising interest rates pushes down net asset value of bond funds and bond ETFs. So you think it's safe in those bonds, and it not necessarily. It depends on how long-term or short-term those bond funds are. How liquid are they as far as, you know, are they 30-day bond fund or 90-day or are they 10-year bond fund? But I'm talking about maturity dates of the bonds inside them. The longer they are, the more effect rising interest rates will have. So check it out and just be careful knowing what you have. You know, maybe if you can go to cash, that would be, might be better if you need the money in the next year or two. Okay. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You know you can take advantage of our free retirement reviews no matter where you live in the U.S. You can send along your statements. We can go over them together. You'll have questions, of course. I'll have questions. We can share some ideas, maybe some solutions. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then portfolio review to set up a time.
You've got a professional financial advisor at your fingertips for this hour. Why not take advantage? Get your question in to Steve right now. He'd love to shed some light on your options, help you learn how to make the best possible money decisions. Join us at 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Longtime listener, love the show. Learn lots from you guys and keep the show going, please. I have a quick question here on a stock that I've been watching and considering buying. I think it might be one that you guys like because it's a kind of a consumer needed or staple stock, so to speak. It's EMR, Emerson Electric Company. Been watching them here for a while, about the last 6-8 months. I've seen they've gone up really nicely in their stock price, plus they pay a real healthy dividend that will always be there to pay and so forth. What do you guys think of this stock? Would this be a good purchase? And what would be a good entry price? I don't know if this one would drop any lower or not. Tell me what you think of it, please, and give me your thoughts and opinions. I'd appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Have a good day.
Emerson Electric, everybody. EMR, it's a big company, $41 billion. I like the company. It's a very solid, secure kind of company. Design supplies, products, technology, engineering services for industrial, commercial, and consumer markets. It's going to make $261 this year. That's down from $278 last year and $289 the year before and $380. So in other words, it's been going down, the earnings, but they are going to rebound next year from $260 to $290. So maybe they've turned around. It looks like they have had 7 quarters in a row with sales slowly falling. And then this quarter, most recent quarter, sales jumped 10%. And in anticipation of that, the stock rose beginning in November from $49 to $64, $63.92 today. Now, you ask me, this is, yes, a good company to hold, have in your portfolio, a good solid company, pays 3% dividend, but I think it's too expensive right now. P/E ratio is 23, the 5-year range is 15 to 24. This good, solid company that you really want to buy when it's on sale. For instance, I'll give you a for sale. In 2015, I noticed there was insiders buying at around $42. And in recent times, insiders have been selling. When I say recent, I mean in the last few weeks, insiders are selling the stock. So that tells you that, you know, the best time to buy this stock is when it's on sale, and it's not on sale right now. So I put it on my watch list and just be patient because it'll come back down. It had a good day today, up 1% almost, up 59 cents, not 0.93%, almost 1%. But I would wait and be patient. I buy it on sale. Wait for it's on sale. Nothing much is on sale right now, everybody, so you're just going to have to be patient. Don't be pushing in to get into the market. Don't. There's no need. Someday the market will be on sale. I mean, I can't tell you when. But why are you such anxious? Why are you so anxious to risk your money? You don't need to. You can just take your time. You know, there's buys out there, but, you know, don't be in a big rush to get your money in. Please don't. Don't need to. I mean, we are in October. You know what I've said about October. Now, I also said in recent times, just yesterday, I told you about the dangers about October, okay, and compared it with previous times. But how about there are investors who see signs of market on the edge of melting up, not down. And I don't know if I even gave you the market conditions today. That Dow was up 20, the NASDAQ up 3, and the S&P up 3. Up, the stocks are up on volume were 50. Stocks down on volume was 137 of them. Anyways, some people are investors seeing the stock market on the verge of melting up. Why is that? Well, they're pointing to a very timid Federal Reserve about raising rates. They're very slow. So liquidity is still very much in play. And there is an excess of credit. They also point to just the technical aspects of higher highs in the stock market. Okay, so, you know, a melt-up is defined by Investopedia. You can go take a look at it. And a melt-up is described as a dramatic and unexpected rise by a stampede of investors. Maybe this is melting up. Maybe it's true. Therefore, how far is up? I mean, how far can it go? It can keep going until it, you know, we got to, investors run out of money, I suppose. So I wouldn't, you know, don't discount it. Yeah, I can't tell you when that will stop, but it could be a melt up. And see, I always try to balance it. Remember yesterday I talked about all the danger signs are out there, and how right now it's similar to, today's market is similar to the market of 1987. And by the way, October 20th. It was actually Monday, October 19th, not Tuesday, October 20th. Because here I am looking at the Wall Street Journal for that day and the day after the fall. But just be aware. It could be that we're in a melt-up procedure here, and that could last a while. I don't know. Let's get back to our 24-hour anytime listener line, pick up another question, 888-99-CHART.
Oh, hello. My name is Kaushik, and I'm calling from Naperville, Illinois, a regular listener to your show. I want your opinion about a stock called MuleSoft, MULE. I bought it on the first day of its IPO at around $25.55 a share, and currently it is around $20 and some change. I'm willing to hold it for a long time, but wondering if, it's a good investment. Thank you so much.
Well, MuleSoft Inc. came out public, as he said. That $17 was the public IPO price. The first trade was in the mid-20s. And today it's at 2016, so it's down. The problem with the company is it doesn't make any money. MuleSoft, it develops and markets an integration platform for connecting applications and data sources in the cloud. It doesn't make any money yet. Sales are growing very fast. Sales are growing 50% or more per quarter, quarter after quarter after quarter. It's a $2 billion company, but sales are only $70 million a quarter, or, you know, $210 million a year with a $2 billion, that's a 10, 11 times sale. That's pretty pricey, and it doesn't make money. Management owns 44% of the company, and mutual funds, you know, it's a $20 stock. Mutual funds pretty much are holders of it, but not really increasing their holdings. You don't remember my rule is don't buy stocks, don't buy IPOs, and don't buy them. Don't even think about them until after 6 months have gone by. After 6 months have come by. Why do I say that? Because after 6 months, the insiders are able to sell their shares. And this stock came out in March, and 6 months later, if September, and here it is, looks like there's been a lot of pressure on it, downwards. So, I don't know enough about it, but it doesn't make money, so therefore I'm not interested myself. So I would say no. Okay, the dollar weakness. Let's talk about the dollar. The dollar weakness and how it has affected the stock market rise, our stock market rise. Think about this. The dollar has fallen almost 9% this year, pretty much consistently down, down, down for most of the year. If you're a foreigner and you own the EU and you're buying stocks in the American market using your money, you haven't seen any, very little or if any, gains at all. At all. Or the Japanese yen. Because the dollar has gone down value. So you're buying the stock, okay, in the U.S. market and using your euros. And the dollar goes down, then you sell it, and you sell it and buy it in dollars and sell it in dollars. You're not making any money, even though the price of the stock went up. So how about, you know, how about if you're a large international company that has 50% of your earnings outside the United States? With the dollar going weak, your earnings should benefit outside the United States, right? So don't ever forget about the dollar and how it impacts earnings for corporations and how it impacts the stock market. The dollar adjusted market, if you adjusted the dollar for currency fluctuation against other currencies, our market actually peaked in March, not now. Isn't it interesting? Just thought I'd share that a little bit. 888-99-CHART, you're listening to Invest Talk. Yesterday we talked about the benefits of holding stocks for the long term, but what are the shortfalls? How do you know when a stock should be sold? I'm open to any money topic questions you might have. Reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. I have a question about a term called value trap. I read an article which calls the offshore drillers value traps, and I was wondering if you can help me explain the term and how we can identify a value trap from a company's fundamentals. Thank you.
Well, that's why they call it a trap. It's hard to identify. I just talked about Macy's early on in the show and how it looks like a value trap to me. They're hard to identify because they look like really good bargains. Usually, a value trap is a very strong in the past company, a company that's always been strong, okay? And we have this sense that this company's always been a good, strong company. And today, it's really selling at very low prices compared to its earnings and the PE ratio. And therefore, it looks like a really great value. So one of the hints is that it is a strong company and it has been a strong company in the past. Another hint is things are different now in some way, shape, or form. For instance, I told you about Teva and how I was trapped in that. I think that was a value trap because I was buying a PE ratio of 7 and it's the world's largest generic pharmaceutical. I knew it had problems. I knew it didn't have a CEO, and I knew they had issues. I knew they had lots of debt, but they had the cash flow to support it. Well, that was a value trap because now the PE is 4 because the stock even went down much further all of a sudden because the CEO or that came aboard cut the dividend by 75%. When the dividend was a reason why I bought it and everybody else bought it. So when it got the dividend, everybody dumped the stock. The stock shot down. Value trap. It looked like a value stock. Really cheap. but it got cut in half. It got a lot cheaper. Now you're saying, well, is it a good buy now? Well, how do you know it's not a value trap still? I don't know that. Could be. I still like it. Sales are growing. I kind of like where it is. But there, it's hard, you know, it's hard to identify a value trap. That's why it's called a trap. It's trapping you. It traps you. Because you think it's really, really reasonable value. And you want to buy it. You want to buy it bad. Be very, very careful. Puerto Rico. Could talk about Puerto Rico for a minute. You know, Puerto Rico got devastated by the hurricanes, right? We know that. But also remember, they were already bankrupt before those hurricanes happened. They owe $70 billion. Now, this is not a very big country. I mean, a very big, it's not a country. It's a possession of ours, not a possession. What do they call it? Commonwealth? I think it's a commonwealth. It's not a state. They use American dollars. So one way they could get, you know, a country could get out of debt is to devaluate their currency. Well, they can't because they use only American dollars. They can't do that. But to get in that far in debt took years, decades. 10 years of economic decline and ballooning deficits. While the best people in Puerto Rico left the country to move to the U.S. Unemployment rate 12%. That was before the hurricane. 43.5% of the people are below the poverty line. There's only 3.4 million people, but that's down 8% from 2010. They owe $12,000 per person in debt. And remember, 43% are below the poverty line. They don't have that money. Their debt was downgraded to junk status in 2013. And a lot of people, a lot of hedge funds bought their debt when they issued more bonds back then because they were paying 8% and 9%. Looked like a value trap, doesn't it? And bonds. So my point is, you know, we talk about all the damage and let's rebuild, help rebuild Puerto Rico. What are you going to do with all that debt? Because there, it's more than just rebuilding the infrastructure. They got a big problem in their economy. How are they going to fix that? That's the key here. Not just rebuilding the infrastructure in Puerto Rico because of hurricanes. And that takes political will. And something has to be done with that debt. I think President Trump is right. There's going to have to be some forgiveness of that debt. You watch. Well, they're filing bankruptcy. So that, you know, it'll happen. Time's up for the hour, everybody. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. I hope you feel this hour was worth your time. I really do. And for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP family, I want to thank you for being with me today. And let's do it again tomorrow. A reminder to take the first step in building a retirement investment strategy that fits you is just go take our risk analysis quiz. It only takes a few minutes, 5 minutes maybe. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.